Cape Talk. Sarah Jane is on Twitter.
You can tweet her at ThisIsSJKing.
You can indeed tweet me at ThisIsSJKing. Somebody is saying, SJ Brain Teaser. Yes, apologies for that. Indeed, SJ Brain Teaser, which you are going to have less time than you would normally have. I'm afraid you've got about half an hour to get your answer in. And today it comes in from Stella in Croydon in the UK. Hello. I used to live near Croydon. Here we go. Runs over fields and woods all day, under the bed at night, sits not alone, with long tongue hanging out, awaiting for a bone. What am I? I thought this was very clever. Runs over fields and woods all day, under the bed at night, sits not alone, with long tongue hanging out, awaiting for a bone. What am I? That's your brain teaser this morning from Stella in Croydon. Bizarrely, but welcome, Stella, if you're listening. You've got, yeah, just under half an hour to get your answers into me on the WhatsApp line, please. 072 567 1567. All right. We look to give you an inspiring story every Sunday morning by inviting onto the show someone who has perhaps overcome adversity or displayed resilience in the face of hardship, turned their life around maybe. And in light of yesterday having been Dyslexia Awareness Day and this week being Dyslexia Awareness Week, our guest today is British entrepreneur Mike Jones. And Mike is the founder of the International renowned Nessie Learning Programme for dyslexic learners. A couple of years ago, a short film, Michael, was made about his experiences as a bullied dyslexic child in school and the efforts of his mum, Pat, to help him. Mike couldn't even spell his name in school and attended a number of schools before being identified with dyslexia. Eventually, though, his mum decided to homeschool him and the pair worked really hard together to teach Mike to read. And Pat, in fact, created many games to make reading fun for Mike, some of which form part of the Nessie Learning Programme, which is used by so many dyslexia sufferers today. I caught up with Mike recently and began by asking when it became obvious that something wasn't quite right.
It's pretty much right at the beginning of school. I think kids understand that something's wrong almost immediately.
Mm.
I remember when we were introduced to this reading scheme. It was called the Ladybird book scheme.
I remember and it well.
It was all colour-coded. And kids were going, oh, I'm on this book and I'm on this colour. What are you on? I never got past book one.
Sure.
And it made me feel ashamed. So I think you get to realise pretty quickly that right from the beginning of school, that something's not right.
For your mum, when did she perhaps pick up that something also wasn't quite right? Because it would take some years before you would actually receive the diagnosis of dyslexia. But for your mum, who we will talk about in a minute, who has just been extraordinary in the work that she's done around dyslexia and dyslexia awareness and education, what sort of sparked a concern or an acknowledgement of something's not quite right here?
Well, I was deeply unhappy at school.
Right.
And I didn't want to go to school.
Yeah.
And I would refuse. And I'd have tantrums and screaming fits. I'd pretend I was ill. I would do anything not to go to school, to be humiliated. And I remember having just screaming fits and shouting and throwing things. And I was really out of control. I think at a certain point, you just hit a wall where you just don't want to go through it anymore. And I was getting into trouble at school. I was being disruptive because I was so unhappy.
What were some of the misconceptions, might be one of the terms to use, that around why you were acting out? Was it just Mike's the naughty one, Mike's naughty, Mike's disruptive?
Well, I think everyone said I was stupid.
Right.
And lazy. And that seemed to be right because I couldn't read anything and I couldn't spell anything. We had a spelling test every Friday and I couldn't do it, so I'd copy from my friend. But I couldn't even copy them right. And you had to read out your score at the end. And every single time I got zero and everyone would laugh at me. And it kind of reinforced that I was stupid. And even though I was trying as hard as I could, I just wasn't getting anywhere. So I guess I can't remember what the question was.
No. I just in terms of how you were viewed and your behaviour, your disruptive behaviour was viewed at the time by your teachers, etc. And I think you've explained that beautifully. What information? Sorry, go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say some teachers were amazing and were really caring and wanted to help me. They just didn't know how to help me. There was one teacher, I still see her now. She's left teaching me, and she works in a hardware store. And I go in there and we have a chat. And she tried to teach me to spell the word because. And she'd bring me to the front of the class and she'd spend time with me and she'd get me to say the letters. And it took weeks and weeks. And eventually I sort of got it and then I forgot it again. But the fact that she was actually taking an interest in me and trying made a massive difference to me. Yeah. And then there were other teachers who would just threw up their hands and were angry with me for not being able to do the work or not having handed in the work that they'd set. And so I guess it's a mixed bag. Some teachers are amazing and others maybe not so good.
Children can be incredibly cruel, and you suffered at the hands of the school bullies. And was that, were they bullying you because you were struggling to read and write? Were they bullying you because your behaviour was disruptive? What was the, and what are your memories of those school bullies?
I guess I was an easy target because I didn't have many friends because no one wanted to be friends with the fool. And I did have a couple of close friends, but they were also sort of people that were kind of not popular, if you like. And the school bullies, it was just easy to push me around. But I did fight back, and that got me into trouble. And I was thrown out of quite a few schools.
What was the turning point? Was the turning point being diagnosed with dyslexia, and how did that happen?
I think, well, I was lucky that my mum was a teacher. She was a maths teacher. But sometimes she would actually not make me go to school, but she'd take me with her into school. And I'd just sit down and quietly in a corner and draw or something like that. And it just got to a point where I think I'd been thrown out of a couple of different schools, and I didn't want to go to school. She knew there was a problem, and I can't remember how she'd heard about dyslexia, but she must have heard about dyslexia. And there was a town about 20 miles away that had a testing center, and she took me there. And it came back that I had dyslexia, and the psychologist that assessed me said, well, we can't say this officially that he's got dyslexia, but you know, you need to get some specialist lessons for him. But we couldn't afford that.
And what age were you? Sorry, Mark, what age were you when you were diagnosed?
I think I was about eight.
About eight. Yeah. What, I mean, at eight, does really a diagnosis of why you are struggling help you? It might help, you know, when we, as adults, when we receive diagnoses of a certain condition, we kind of go, oh, right, okay, that's that, that explains that, that's why I've been behaving like that, that's why I've been feeling like that. Did that help you? I mean, how does an eight-year-old process dyslexia?
I think it always helps people to know what the reason is, why you're struggling. And I've seen many adults and children who are not, they're not ashamed of finding out they have dyslexia. They're relieved because, and that's how it felt for me as well, that, oh, there's a reason for it. And that's the first step in getting some help. And once you're taught in the way that you can learn, it just changes things completely. Unfortunately, that teaching wasn't available in the school because the teachers were not trained to identify dyslexia, how to help kids with dyslexia. They were completely, even though many of them would have tried to help me, they didn't have the knowledge or the skills to do so.
If you are just joining us on Weekend Breakfast this morning, my guest on My Amazing Life is Mike Jones, who is the CEO of Nessie Learning, which is dedicated to improving the lives of children with dyslexia. Children like Mike himself, who, as we're hearing, had an extremely difficult childhood, particularly in school, in terms of his learning and pre-diagnosis of dyslexia. And then what happened, Mike? Because your mum made the decision to homeschool you. Why did she take that decision, and how do you think that served you going forward?
It completely transformed my life. I think that I would have probably, well, I've definitely left school illiterate, completely illiterate.
Sure.
And maybe I'd have got into trouble. I don't know what would have happened, but it didn't. It changed the course of my life completely. There are a few specialist teachers out there. They're not many. They're very rare. And it costs money, a lot more money, but more money than we had at the time. So she trained herself. She just read as many books as she could. She found out as much as she could about dyslexia. And then she started to teach me. And a lot of the techniques she came up with, she invented herself, but she followed a structured, systematic, It was called Orton-Gillingham. It's an approach where you're taught the building blocks of language, how it connects together. There's logical rules behind it. Sometimes English seems like it's got no logic behind it. It's got these crazy words that don't seem to follow anything. But at least 80% of it follows rules. And once you know those rules, you can start putting it together. That's what happened to me. And I learned to read, and I learned to read pretty rapidly, really. I mean, I think I was out of school for a year or two, but by the time I went back in, I could do it.
For those people who are listening in now who don't have any experience with dyslexia, just explain, Mike, explain what it is. Explain how it feels to have it. What is it? It's a very simplified way of sort of saying, oh, well, it's getting letters mixed up. But to actually experience that, what is it? What is the challenge when you were presented with a book, for example? What would be the challenge for you? What are you seeing that perhaps somebody without dyslexia might be able to just read off pat something in a book? What was the specific challenge for you?
Well, I guess the brain is wired to talk, but it's not wired to read. It's not a natural process, I don't think. So there are many children, some children, there are about a proportion of children that will just absorb how to read from looking at words and listening to people. But there are a proportion of people like me who have dyslexia where it's not an automatic process, and you're not just going to absorb it magically into your mind. You're never going to learn to read unless you are taught a structured, systematic way. Now, dyslexia, they've scanned people's brains and things like that and discovered that there are some faulty bits in the middle of it that makes it much harder for you to process spoken and written language. And that can affect, that's an umbrella term, dyslexia. It covers quite a wide variety of difficulties. So everyone's slightly different, but basically, it's going to make you slower at processing language. It's going to make it harder to retrieve the connections between letters and sounds. And it can have other effects as well. It can make handwriting very difficult. It can make sequencing the alphabet very difficult, or actually remembering what you've seen. So looking at the board to try and copy down into a book, by the time you've looked down at the book, wow, you've forgotten it. It's just gone. It's not in your head anymore. So it's about memory as well. Memory for things like letters and sounds and words. It's quite a difficult thing to say.
For sure. I imagine it's one of those things, unless you've experienced it personally, it's very difficult to really understand how it would feel and what the experience is of being dyslexic. You know, my brother was slightly dyslexic, and his experience of school, sort of growing up in the early 80s, was very much of the idea of, because you're struggling in this one area, and you'll probably relate to this, Mike, you therefore, it's a kind of, the assumption is you're not very bright, which is absolutely not true. There's no link between intelligence and dyslexia. The assumption was you're not very bright. And I remember in England back in those days, you would be put into sets, and you would be in, you know, set one for this and set. But when we were at school, and I think you these days, I don't even know if that is a way of that they still do it. But he was, because he struggled in, for example, English, because he, you know, is having to read and write, he was put in the bottom set for everything. And it was just not at all a true reflection of his overall capabilities, but everything throughout school, throughout his subjects, and the impact that had on his self-esteem in terms of learning. He, by the time it came to sort of secondary school, he was completely disenfranchised and disinterested in learning. When you then were taken out of school by your mum, and she dedicated so much time, and we should just say, your mum, Pat Jones, OBE, went on to become a very well-known dyslexia specialist, and she formed the Bristol Dyslexia Centre, and as I say, received her OBE in 2015 for services to dyslexic children. The fact that she dedicated that time and to the learning and helping you, by the time you went back to school, was it a completely different experience? Were you treated differently by educators?
No, not really. I think I was no longer in the bottom set.
Right.
In fact, I went up to the top.
Right.
But everything was always a struggle still. It just, even when you've learned to read and write, dyslexia doesn't go away.
Mm.
It's going to make that processing of language slower. And I mean, I'm much slower reading a book nowadays, and I still make spelling mistakes. Those things are always, you just get used to it, really. You remember that there are certain words that are always going to cause you trouble.
Do you enjoy reading, though, Mike? Do you read for pleasure?
I do, yes.
Yeah.
I've got a curious mind, if you like.
Right,
so I'm always trying to find more information. And there are lots of different ways of taking information. Audiobooks are great for some people. And it's still reading, because you're taking that vocabulary in, you're taking that knowledge in, and that's what reading's for. So although I was doing very well at school, everything, I had to try so much harder than everyone else. Everything took longer. And I think it teaches you determination to actually, you have to work harder, and so you do. And that's a great lesson for life.
Our guest on My Amazing Life this morning is Mike Jones, who is the CEO of Nessie Learning, which Mike set up to improve the lives of children with dyslexia. And it's a learning program that schools across the world and across the have been using. Tell us the rest of your educational career. What did it look like? And was it, did you have goals to, what did you want to be? What did you want to be when you were in secondary school? What did you want to do? Because what you've ended up doing is probably, I don't know if you believe in people having a calling in life, but it seems to certainly have been yours. But what were your dreams, your ambitions career-wise when you were a young boy?
I think my school experience really scarred me. I think that looking back on it, I was pretty good at art and painting. And I always remember there was an art teacher that gave me some encouragement and some praise. And that made such a big difference to me that I would get some praise, that I focused very much on that. And actually, a lot of the art at my school was pretty terrible. And I went to night school. And the teacher I had there was amazing, so good. And in fact, years later, I ended up teaching his son.
Wow.
But I got off track of that. But I wanted to do art, and I thought about law. I can't remember why I thought about law, but my head teacher said to me, well, what are you going to do when you leave school? And I said, well, probably art or maybe law. And he said, oh, don't do law. You're just not smart enough for law. And that kind of stuck with me. And I did go to art college to start with, and I was through my halfway through my course or a third of the way through. And then I thought, do you know what? I'm going to transfer and do law. And so I did transfer and studied law just to prove him wrong. And I got through to the end and I did really well. But it was terrible. Oh, the books were huge.
No, and, listen, I also studied law, Mike, and I remember some of those constitutional law books particularly were just extraordinary. I mean, they used to blow my mind, and I don't have dyslexia. I mean, that is just phenomenal.
It was tough.
Yeah.
But it did stretch my mind, I guess, and I there were aspects of it I really enjoyed, just not the book work.
I want to talk to you about Nessie. Where did the idea come from? I know that you sort of incorporate and used as a foundation a lot of those early skills and programs or teaching methods that your mom had used. Tell us about the Nessie Learning Program.
Well, let me skip back a little bit because when I finished law school, I worked at Citizens Advice Bureau as a volunteer, helping people that were in trouble. And then I was supposed to go on to London to study to be a barrister. And I went to help out my mum at that dyslexia centre that she had founded over the summer, just answering the phone. And I was speaking to parents, and these parents were in tears. They didn't know what to do. And it really touched chord in me, and I thought, wow, this is what I need to do. This is what I need to be helping these people, because there are children going through what I went through. So I retrained as a teacher, and I joined Pat at her dyslexia center, and the work they were doing there was incredible. It was transforming the lives of these children and parents, because once those kids were being taught in the way they learned, their lives changed direction, and that was very rewarding. And I realized that the games that Pat had sort of made up to help me were fantastic, but they were only helping a very small number of children. So I thought, well, why isn't this going to be online so everyone can get it? Because so many people just can't afford to get the specialist help. And if you could make it affordable and accessible to everyone, that could transform so many more children's lives. So that's how I founded Nessie, really. Nessie Learning. Pat and I sort of worked together, and I was still teaching and doing a little bit here and there, and it's grown organically over the years.
It's used in 192 countries around the world, I gather. You must feel extraordinarily proud. Where are we now? And you spoke about the fact that, you know, there were some teachers who you felt they wanted to help you, but they just didn't have the skill and they didn't have the knowledge. Where are we now? How has that landscape changed in terms of the information that educators have in being able to spot early on that a child may have dyslexia?
It hasn't changed that much, unfortunately.
Sure.
Certainly people are aware of dyslexia a lot more now. And people are more open to saying that they have dyslexia and are often relieved to find out they have dyslexia. But so many people don't find out until they're adults. They're still not being picked up at school. So there are the deep dyslexics, if you like. There's 4% that have really bad dyslexia. That's so bad that they are identified at school. And then there are so many more kids that just get through school and it's not picked up. So I think that the best research we have is that 1 in 5, 20% of people have dyslexia. Most people say it's about 10% of kids or people that have dyslexia. But that's really an estimate. That's not based on any research. The research shows that it's 20%. There's a lot of people with dyslexia out there, and it's not being picked up. So teachers are still not being trained to identify dyslexia or know how to help it, unfortunately. So although there's a lot more awareness about it now, the skills are not there. I mean, there's not even a specialist teacher in every school. And teachers around the world are not being trained in how to help kids with dyslexia. And they can be. It's not rocket science. It's just training teachers to recognize, identify, and know what to do.
Yeah. If you're just tuned in to Weekend Breakfast, my guest on My Amazing Life is Mike Jones. We're talking to him this Dyslexia Awareness Week. Mike is the founder of the CEO of Nessie Learning, which is a program that is used in schools and homes in 192 countries around the world to support children with dyslexia. Mike, if there are parents listening in now, if there are even children listening in now who perhaps have just maybe received a diagnosis of dyslexia for their child, or thinking that perhaps this is an issue that affects their family, or feeling the frustration that you spoke about at the start of our conversation. Any words of hope, any words of support, advice for those families?
Find out as much as you can about dyslexia, first of all. Get the facts, get to know the difficulty you have. And because it's going to be up to you. For the children, they need to become self-advocates. They need to know what things help them. They need to know how they're going to learn. They need to be able to explain that to other people, like their teachers even. And they need to learn determination, because they are going to have to work harder. It's going to be really tough, but you can get through it. And there is a way of learning. And it's now referred to as structured literacy. Structured literacy is learning the building blocks of language. So first of all, you have to develop something called phonological awareness. That is being able to understand how sounds work together, how to manipulate those sounds. So for instance, the word cat, if you take away the C and put an H, then it becomes hat. So it's learning how those sounds go together. That's the first step. Then you have phonic knowledge of all the different sounds. There are 26 letters of the alphabet, but there are 44 phonemes, 44 sounds made by those. So when you've learned all those different sounds, then you can learn how words chunk together in syllables. All these rules, once you've learned them, then you can apply them and it makes sense. And you learn how to break that secret code. So there is a way of learning. It is going to be tough and you've got to be determined. But I've seen so many amazing children and parents who have fought for things to change, who have learned that they want to make a change and become advocates.
Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, sharing your story with us this morning. If you want to find out more about the Nessie Learning Program, you can go to the website, which is nessie.com. Mike, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk to you.